My thoughts on the Harris candidacy. https://wp.me/p7naso2zb. Healthcare reforms for Joe and Kamala. Joe, go bold or go home revised. Joe, either go bold or retire. I still believe in her and in the basic goodness of the American people. I believe that the people will choose goodness over evil, love over hate and progress over going back. When faced with the choice, a demented, deranged, senile old man filled with hatred and revenge, or a competent, accomplished woman, they will make the right choice. Congratulations, my Berkeley hometown girl. You got this, girl. Go bold or go home. Berkeley girl makes it. The news. That Biden was stepping down, throwing his support for Kamala Harris as president, filled me with joy and anticipation. Kamala Harris attended my elementary school, Thousand Oaks in Berkeley, a few years before me, and is a Berkeley girl through and through. Go Berkeley. Thousand Oak girl, I say. T.O. Tuffy girl power. The first female VP of Asian descent. The first VP of Black descent. The first Caribbean to be on the ticket. And the first Hindu as well. And the first Berkeley native on the ticket. It is time for Berkeley to rule. In my humble opinion, Kamala, here's what I would campaign on. I retired from the U.S. State Department in 2016 after 27 years of service. I grew up in Berkeley, attended Thousand Oaks School a few years before you did, went to college at the University of the Pacific and graduated from the University of Washington, Ma Korean Studies, MPA. I also served in the Peace Corps in Korea, and served 27 years in the Foreign Service, serving in 10 countries. I have been to all 50 states and 50 countries. The theme would be getting stuff done for the people. Reforming the federal budget. This is perhaps boring to voters but very important to the long-term stability of the country. I would call upon Congress to change how they do budgets and shift to a two-year budgetary cycle. The first year of Congress would be devoted to passing the two-year budget, the second year would be devoted to oversight and supplemental budget requests. Coupled that shifting to a calendar year budget. Eliminate the possibility of government shutdowns by enacting automatic CRs if budgets are not passed on time. But also require budgets to be passed on time December 1st in the prior year. If a budget is not passed on time, keep Congress in town until the budget is passed. And if for some reason the budget is not passed, dinge congressional salaries until the budget is passed. Second, commission a study to look at our tax situation and make suggestions for common sense tax reform. Start by figuring out how much money the government spends in a given year, the reform of the tax code to generate most of the revenue from taxes. Consider a national sales tax as well. Reserve borrowing for large-scale infrastructure and military spending. And consider a surcharge on income of about $25 million per year. I would also look at federal spending and ask that all departments identify lower priority projects with a required 5% reduction in federal spending per agency over a four-year period, except for health-related and education-related agencies, which would be given a considerable bump up in spending. I would do this for 3 years so that in 3 years overall spending has been reduced by about 10%. Leave it up to the agencies to identify lower priority projects that should not be micromanaged by the White House. For the Defense Department, consider eliminating such things as golf courses, domestic PX, and commissary stores and other non-essential spending. Finally, consider turning over some federal government functions to the states. The conservative idea of moving federal agencies out of Washington, D.C. has considerable merit in my opinion. My advice, in a nutshell, is to make this a campaign about the future and your vision of the future. Paint your opponent Donald Trump as yesterday's candidate, and mock him, calling on Grandpa Trump to retire to Florida and play golf. Depict him as senile, out of touch, corrupt and focused on returning America to the 19th century. and call for progressive, bold new ideas for the future of America. Be optimistic, be full of hope and goodwill. Freely steal from Bernie and Elizabeth's proposals and adopt her detailed plans, after talking with her, of course. Call for reform, not revolution, and stress competence versus incompetence and chaos. Hillary's biggest mistake was, in my view, making it all about how bad Donald Trump is, and not giving the voters a real sense of where she wanted to take the country. And making it seem that she thought she was entitled, and it was her time. That is a big turnoff in politics. She also took it for granted and did not compete everywhere. You have to out-hustle Trump and go everywhere, hold virtual town halls everywhere until the coronavirus threat fades away. You have to earn the trust of the voters and can't be seen as thinking you are entitled to the presidency because you have done your due, so to speak. That is the kiss of electoral suicide. Look at Mitt Romney and Hillary Clinton, both lost because they thought that it was their time and they were entitled to the presidency. The voters simply thought otherwise and showed them the door. And in an age where the voters were ready for a big change to the status quo, being the establishment candidate was the kiss of death. Not to mention she refused to compete everywhere. And allowed Donald Trump to paint her as crooked Hillary and as too much part of the establishment, which the public rightly distrusted so much. She could have picked Bernie Sanders as her running mate, and perhaps defeated Donald Trump. In the end she won where it did not matter and did not compete where she should have competed. So, in this upcoming election you have to tell the voters why you are so much better for them and the country than Donald Trump. It will not be enough to run against Donald. People have to want to vote for you. Your experience counts for a lot, but it is not enough. How to beat Trump? Talk constantly about Donald Trump being the most corrupt president in U.S. history and that he is guilty or gross nepotism. Call him Con Man Don, Poor Felon Con, or Despicable Me Wannabe Don. Finally, ignore his tweets. When he tweets something obnoxious, dismiss it with the phrase "there he goes again." Then talk about your bold yet pragmatic agenda over and over again. Remember, the best way to handle a bully is to mock them over and over again. They can't handle that and he will become more unhinged and dangerous as you mock him. So mock him, girl. He deserves it. And in the debate call him on his BS, brutally fact-check his ass, live on TV. Show the world what an ignorant, senile old man he has become. Go bold or go home. The Times cries out for bold progressive challenges and for fresh thinking. Make people want to vote for you as they share your vision of the possible future. And want to have a positive, can-do message. Here are my suggested policy proposals. I would put forth a series of comprehensive, bold, future-oriented policies and reiterate them every chance you get. You could call them Joe's Plan for the Future of America, or Kamala's Contract with the American People, something along those lines. Let's boldly go into the future. And rename your campaign as Kamala for the American People. Use one of your great assets, your reputation for being an everyday person. But be big, bold, brassy, optimistic, and challenge your opponents to produce a better plan or shut up and work with you to solve the nation's problems. Call for free college education coupled with national service requirements. Call for all Americans to serve 3 years in public service, either in the military or in the government or NGO sector, and in return, they will get 4 years of college paid for. For recent grads, they can serve and get their college debt forgiven. To those who say we can't afford this, say we can't afford to continue to put our college students in crippling debt they cannot afford. And everyone, especially the rich, should shoulder the burden of national service. Call for the Green New Deal. Point out time and time again China, Germany, and other countries are building the green energy resources of the future, while the US, which invented green energy, is moving back to the 19th century. When critics say we can't afford this, tell them we can't afford to ruin the world for our children's future. We can't afford to continue burning fossil fuels. Climate change is real, and the US must lead the way forward. That is what great nations do. Lead the world in embracing change, in embracing the promise of the future. We can do no less. Call to fix Obamacare. point out time and time again that we still have a broken down, too expensive, too burdensome a healthcare system? Point out time and time again that we have the most expensive system in the world, yet we are about 25th in terms of healthcare outcomes. No one in this land should fear going bankrupt if they need to get medical care. We can do this right and we must do it right. I would acknowledge that Obamacare is not perfect and that if you had a chance to redo it you would make it much less bureaucratic and less burdensome. But be proud of what the Democrats accomplished. Promise to fix it and make it work. One potential fix would be to open the federal health care system to anyone who needs insurance and continue to provide subsidies to keep the premiums down. Another option would be an expansion of Medicare, so it covers about half the country. And enact permanent paid sick leave up to a month for all companies employing more than 10 people. When Republicans proclaim that they will repeal Obamacare and replace it with something, call them on their bullshit. Demand to know the plan now or tell them to shut up and work with you to fix Obamacare. Call for a slight reduction of military spending and national security spending to beef up healthcare spending and universal education access. Call to repair our alliances. Declare that our allies are our allies and our friends, and we will work with them to solve the world's problems and restore American leadership. We will rejoin the Paris Climate Change and work to make sure it works. We will rejoin the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And we will figure out how to work with China and even Russia to solve problems of mutual interest such as climate change. Vow to restore partnership with Mexico and Canada and Latin America as well as India and Southeast Asia. And restore ties with Europe as well. Rebuild the UN and international organizations. And join the International Criminal Court. Finally, close Gitmo as an affront to the American system of justice and human rights. Re-Israel vow to work with Palestinians and Israelis alike to restart the peace process. Offer a new deal to North Korea. We will continue to negotiate with the North Koreans, offering them a way towards reunification with South Korea and rejoining the world economic community. You can damn the former president here with faint praise. Say that it was good that he took the initiative to break the logjam and talk to the North, but due to his inexperience and his naivety he was unable to make a deal as the North Koreans played him. You can finish the job. Offer to talk with the Iranians. Tell the Iranians we are ready to talk with them and want a new deal that would benefit them and the US along the lines of what we are offering the North Koreans. Bring the troops home. I would call for some US troops to return to the US, where they will be reposted along our borders and serve as adjunct border patrol agents and first responders as part of their mandatory new national service. Rebuild America. I would gradually reduce military spending and devote resources to rebuilding America's crumbling infrastructure. This must include high-speed trains, and must include perhaps Hyperloop technology or maglev trains. And the next generation of airplanes as well. We must rebuild our mass transit systems. We must embrace the development of driverless vehicles. And as mentioned, we must beef up healthcare spending and assure universal access to higher education. These must be the new national priorities. I would throw the Republicans a bone offers to look at modest reductions in other government spending, for example decreasing spending on NPR but not eliminating it, and a slight decrease in foreign assistance, and UN contributions etc. And other government programs could be trimmed down a bit to pay for higher priorities. Challenge the Republicans on their "you are weakening national security" BS. When the Republicans scream you are weakening national security, call them out on their BS. Ask them how repositioning troops to help deal with national security issues at home weakens national security. How does going to universal military service weaken national security? How does getting out of endless wars weaken national security? How does closing a few bases in Europe weaken national security? Or closing a golf course? Or a commissary? Point out that we already spend more on national security than any other nation on earth. How does rebuilding America's failed infrastructure weaken national security? How does providing medical care or universal higher education, which benefits the entire nation, hamper national security? Challenge them to produce a better plan. Call for comprehensive immigration reform. Start by acknowledging we need to improve security at the border, but the wall is a waste of time and money that will not solve the problem. We need a comprehensive 21st century immigration policy that balances the need for continued immigration with the need to ensure that immigrants contribute to our country and enrich our country as they always have and always will. Again, throw the Republicans a bone offers to ensure that E-Verify is widely used by all employers and punish employers who hire illegals. I would also consider getting rid of the diversity visa program and the sibling immigration category, but grandfather people in that category, giving them 2 years to complete the immigration process with no new applicants being accepted. I would also push English language skills for immigrants as one of the new requirements. They must be able to handle the immigrant visa interview in English. That is something I agree with Trump on. Challenge the Republicans to come up a better plan and work with you to implement it. Call for a return to space, including lunar colonies and Martian colonies. It is time for the US to lead the world again in space exploration. Offer to lead the way in building lunar and Martian colonies with the participation of the world's other space powers. Call for the legalization of marijuana, emptying the prisons of marijuana offenders. End the endless war on drugs. Repeal marijuana prohibition. Empty the prisons of marijuana offenders. End the private prison for profit system. End the prison pipeline that sweeps up brown and black youths and sucks them into prison for life. Reserve prisons for the most dangerous offenders. All other prisoners should be sentenced to community service, drug treatment, or other non-prison sentences. Use the money saved by closing prisons for rebuilding infrastructure. Gun control. I like your gun control proposals. It is a step forward. Continue to push for universal background checks. Fully support LGBT rights. Fully support the religious freedom of all Americans, including non-believers. Call to reignite Roe v. Wade standards. Call for a return to traditional American civil norms that Trump has so badly damaged. Call for reforming the Supreme Court, including nominating the first Hispanic member. For VP, pick a centrist male governor. I like the governor of Kentucky or North Carolina. The governor of Michigan would be a good choice too. The governor of California, not so much. To sum up, be cautious, small-minded, narrowly focused, and all about how bad Donald is, you will lose. In short, go bold or go home. Sincerely, Jake Cosmos Aller. 703-436-1402. JackEckler@gmail.com. https://theworldaccordingtocosmos.com. TO alumnus. Call for public service. Wikipedia on history of national service in the U.S. Pros and cons on national service proposals. Time to embrace national service in exchange for free college tuition. H1 Why national service is worth it. Open letters to the candidates sent to Democratic candidates. Embrace public service, Mr. President. In any event, I believe that the time is now to call for national service in exchange for free college tuition/vocational training or grants to open small businesses. 3 years of service followed by 4 years of either college/technical training, or assistance in opening a small business. Call for free college education coupled with national service requirements. Dear Democratic candidates, I am writing to all of you and to President Trump to call for you to embrace national service in exchange for free college/technical training or assistance in opening a business. It is time to change the game plan in Washington, D.C. You need a new bold proposal that will unite the country and heal the divisions. My proposal is for you to embrace mandatory national service for 3 years. Everyone finishing their service would receive full funding for college, technical training, or a grant to set up their own business, because after all, not everyone needs to go to college. We need to encourage technical training and starting up small business as well. The key is that the service would be universal and all citizens and LPRs between the ages of 18 and 25 would serve 3 years, no exceptions. Most would be military, but people could serve as fine fathers. Adjust police officers, adjust Border Patrol officers, adjust teachers, Peace Corps volunteers or serve in state/local and federal government positions. Call for all Americans to serve 3 years in public service either in the military or in the government or NGO sector, and in return, they will get 4 years of college paid for. For recent graduates, they can serve and get their college debt forgiven. To those who say we can't afford this, say we can't afford to continue to put our college students in crippling debt they cannot afford. And everyone, especially the rich, should shoulder the burden of national service. And point out that shifting to a mandatory national service requirement would save the Pentagon money on salaries. The cost would be modest minimum wage, housing, medical care, and college tuition after their service. People would serve between age 18 and 25, 1 year of training and 2 years of service, with an optional second enlistment for 3 more years of educational benefits through PhD/professional degrees. Starting at age 18 until age 25, people will be randomly selected to begin service. Those who are 25 will have until they turn 26 to report for service. They would have 1 year to report for service. Free college/technical training or money to open a business in exchange for national service. Most people will start college, or tech training institute, then do military or other service, and then return to college to finish their college. That is fine. Ensure that colleges will not only accommodate that but will also offer college credits for military and other on-the-job training acquired during national service. This would also cut the cost of college attendance for most people to a manageable 3 years instead of 4 to 5 years. And of course, ensure that people can go to technical training institutes instead of a traditional college, as we really need to grow the next generation of technical workers as well. And also ensure that those who wish financial assistance in setting up a small business would receive that assistance, as well as we need to encourage the small business start UPS as well. After service can compete to become an NCO/officer or work for the federal/state/local/tribal government/UN or NGO. After finishing basic service, those who wish to make a career of it could compete to become an NCO or an officer and resume service after finishing college. And/or compete to enter government service for the federal government or state and local government as well. The service academies will only accept those who have finished basic service. This would apply to new service academies being set up, see below for more details. All must serve. And most importantly, shared national service will help restore America's sense that this is our land, this land belongs to everyone. The rich and the poor alike. We are all in this together. We have lost sight of that. The military has become an army of paid mercenaries recruited from the lower classes. If everyone serves, there will be less temptation to send troops into harm's way. This will be a win-win for everyone except for the student loan vultures. I would bring most of the troops home and station them along the southern border, where they could be used to help bolster border security and assist as first responders to natural disaster. Sell this as real border security that will get the job done. Establish new service academies for the diplomatic, intelligence services/Space Force/NASA, and law enforcement. I would also call for 4 new national service academies to be set up. One would be for diplomatic and intelligence service, the other would be for law enforcement, the third would be for the Space Force/NASA, the last would be more technical scientific agencies of the federal government focusing on science and technology issues. These academies, like the military academies including a Coast Guard Academy, and beefing up the Maritime Service Academy, would take only those who finished their military basis service. This would be a great way to restore our diplomatic corps and intelligence services, as well as our law enforcement person. All graduates can meet their service obligation, 5 years post-graduation, through working for federal/state/local/tribal governments, the UN, or NGOs. All the service academies, as well as the medical schools, the Foreign Service Training Center, which will be transformed into the new diplomatic/intelligence training academy, would work together on the National Service Academies Consortium to coordinate policies and training, including postgraduate training programs at the various military and other federal government training programs. National service will bring U.S. together as one nation. I believe that this proposal could be enacted with widespread bipartisan support. It would go a long way to help heal the divisions of our country and bring us all together as a nation. I hope you will fully embrace this proposal and I look forward to discussing it with your staff. Welcome to the God Pod, a newsletter dedicated to satire and comedy. We rely entirely on the generosity of our readers to be able to continue our efforts. If you appreciate what you read here today, consider becoming a paid supporter. Trump must drop out because he's old as fuck. July 22. Dear humans. God here. Now that President Biden has heroically passed the torch to Kamala Harris, can we talk about the orange elephant in the room? Trump must drop out because he's old as fuck. Yeah, I said it. At 78 years old, Donald is practically fossilized. You wouldn't trust your grandpa to fix your Wi-Fi, so why let him run the country? He's older than dirt and twice as clueless. Like holy shit, did you see his speech at the RNC last week? The giant creep rambled on for 2 hours like he was Grandpa Simpson. Look, the presidency is a tough gig. It needs someone with energy, someone who can stay awake past 7 p.m. without nodding off. Trump. He falls asleep in the court. He fell asleep during his own convention. He's got one foot in the grave and the other on a banana peel. The only marathon he's running is a nap marathon. Support our satire. And let's talk about the gaffes. Donald says some stupid insane shit that doesn't make sense every single time he speaks. The only people it makes sense to are also totally delusional Christian nationalist freaks like Marjorie Taylor Greene. And don't get me started on the health issues. Remember that mysterious trip to Walter Reed? Make America great again? This man can't handle a ramp. The only thing he can make great again is the act of face planting into the ground. So, here's the divine decree, Trump, pack it up. Go home, put on your slippers, and watch Matlock reruns. Leave running the country to someone who can remember what day it is without checking Fox News. It's time for you to drop out, you crusty old bag of assholes. Now that I, the Lord thy God, have brought attention to this issue, I am sure the media will be obsessing about it every day from here on out. The Lord has spoken. 7 lessons from Joe Biden's candidacy. The Democratic Party is healthy. The Republican Party is not. Jonathan V. Last. July 22. 17 lessons. Before we start, I did a YouTube thing about Biden last night, if you're interested. Now let's go. 1. The Democratic Party is a healthy institution. On the night of June 27, the various power centers within the Democratic Party began a difficult conversation: was Joe Biden still capable of running a vigorous campaign? Over 3 weeks the party reached a diffuse if not unanimous consensus: he was not. This consensus was the product of all levels of the party, elder statesmen such as Nancy Pelosi, elected Democrats analyzing their own future prospects, donors making decisions about spending, and the main body of public opinion among Democratic voters. Once this consensus was reached, the various power centers began a dialogue with the party's leader, President Biden. The party expressed its choice. Biden pushed back. The party took up the question again and, after due consideration, held firm. Joe Biden then stepped aside for the good of the nation. This is how healthy institutions are supposed to work. At the Bulwark there has been a lot of drama over the last 3 weeks. We told you what we really thought, even though it meant making some people mad. Our mission is to have honest and real conversations. Because that's what healthy institutions do. Right here, in the Bulwark community, those conversations were great. I mean, they were often painful. But they were always civil and conducted in good faith. How special is this community? We had one member who was so disappointed in us that he cancelled his subscription and then came back to the comments every day to try to convince others to cancel their subscriptions, too. And he did it passionately, but with respect. Where do you find people like that on the internet? It was amazing. The coming weeks are going to be full of history. Come and ride through it with us. Jay, the process which elevated Kamala Harris was sensible. The Democratic Party made another institutional decision in parallel with the Biden question, it vetted Kamala Harris. This subroutine executed in the background, but it was active. Democratic voters began to consider her as the nominee and polling showed that they were comfortable with her. Party elders evaluated her fitness. Donors and elected Democrats took her measure. The fact that no anti-Harris groundswell or even boom let emerged is proof that the party decided that Harris was an acceptable nominee. After Biden blessed Harris on Sunday afternoon, the party coalesced around her in much the way it did Biden after the New Hampshire primary in 2020. The Democratic Party will enter the election more unified than it had been pre-debate. 3. Kamala Harris can run as an insurgent, but with the advantages of an incumbent. The largest advantage of incumbency is that a candidate does not have to take base-pleasing positions during a primary campaign that can hurt him during a general election. Because of the extraordinary nature of her ascendance, Harris possesses this advantage. She will carry nearly every advantage of incumbency and yet she can credibly position herself as this election's change agent. 4. Trump is holding the age bomb. The Trump campaign spent 2 years creating a political bomb concerning old age. They assumed that they could plant this bomb at the feet of Joe Biden. Trump is now the one holding the age bomb. He is not only a full generation older than Harris, everything about him looks geriatric by comparison. From his gait to his bronzed over pallor, from the way he rambles and gets lost in sentences to his inability to keep facts straight. Every split screen now makes Trump look old and decrepit by comparison. 5. There was enormous pent-up demand among Democrats for a younger leader. In the first 24 hours, Kamala Harris raised over $100 million from small-dollar donors. Sit with that for a moment. $100 million. That's more money than any Democrat has ever raised in a single day. It's twice as much as Trump raised following his felony conviction. If this doesn't snap your head back, it should. Because it's as good a proxy as you'll find for excitement. It will be several days until we have polling with a more detailed view of Harris's support from Democratic voters, but it is already clear that she will perform much better than Biden has within her party. Here's my advice, you should be open to the idea that Harris could ride a wave of excitement and passion that absolutely no one was seeing until Biden stepped aside. I'm talking Obama 08 levels of energy. It's not a given. But it's in the realm of the possible. Keep your eyes peeled for it. 6. The Republican Party is a failed state. At the debate, Donald Trump also demonstrated, again, that he is unfit for office. He rambled and lied incoherently. He is a convicted felon. A jury found him guilty of sexual assault. He has said he wants to be a dictator and that he wants to terminate parts of the Constitution. He selected as his running mate a man who advised disobeying orders from the Supreme Court and forcing a constitutional crisis. Until last week, there was nothing stopping the Republican Party from forcing Trump off the ticket. The party elders and elected officials could have demanded that Trump step aside. Republican voters could have said that they had no confidence in his ability to govern. Donors could have closed their wallets. But the plain fact is that not one single Republican called on Trump to step aside. Not one. Why? Because the various precincts of the Republican Party understand that they hold no power at all over Trump. They could not ask him to withdraw from the race. Even broaching the subject would be grounds for excommunication from the party. The Democratic Party is a functioning institution, with checks and balances, constituencies and power structures. Like any institution, it is amorphous and its decision-making is mostly organic. The Republican Party is an autocracy where the only thing that matters is the will of the leader. All power flows through him. All decisions are made by him. There are no competing power centers, only vassal states overseen by his noblemen. 7. Harris is an underdog. One of the reasons the last 3 weeks have been so difficult is because Democrats were not choosing between a good outcome and a bad outcome. Those sorts of choices are easy. Instead, Democrats were tasked with deciding between least bad options. Humans rebel against the idea of least bad. When faced with choices, we want to believe that at least one of them is good. When the first real Harris vs. Trump polling comes out next week, we'll see how big of a hole she's in. But unlike Biden, Harris has the ability to spend the next 3 months on offense, all day, every day. If she can deliver the goods, she has a puncher's chance. 2. In praise of Biden. A slight pushback against those who believe Biden took too long to step aside. It was 3.5 weeks from the debate to Biden pulling out. That's it? Joe Biden is the president, but he's also just a man. Coming to a decision like this one, an unprecedented decision, is hard. There's a lot to weigh and there's a tremendous responsibility to get it right. My own view is that Biden made the call basically as quickly as possible. He couldn't have done it the week of the NATO summit. Then Trump was shot in the ear. Then there was the Republican convention. To my mind, Biden's timing on this was optimal, actually. Nothing about Joe Biden's presidency was inevitable. Not his candidacy. Not his victory over Trump. Not his withdrawal from re-election. At nearly every turn, Biden did the right thing for America. His legacy is assured. He will be remembered as one of the great modern presidents. I said this last night and I'll say it again. History had its eye on Joe Biden, and he met the moment. He did his part. Now it's up to Kamala Harris and us to do ours. This is the moment. Live it with us. Join now. 3 revealed preferences. In the coming weeks we will find out if the people who said, "I hate Trump, but Biden is too old," really meant it. Will they find some new excuse for why they have to vote for Trump? Will they become unconcerned about the risks of old age and cognitive decline in a president? I'm not talking about partisan public personalities on Twitter. I'm talking about swing voters, the kind of Trump to Biden voters who have been backsliding in Trump's direction. Sarah's focus groups are going to be absolutely vital for understanding how this group thinks. Don't miss them. LCIC. Chill the fuck out, we've got this. There's no need for panic. Jeff Tide Rich. July 22nd. So, that happened. Upgrade to paid. For about an hour after Biden's announcement, I ran around with my hair on fire. I'd just spent a month warning everyone about the chaos that Biden dropping out would bring: infighting, battles over fundraising, lawsuits, atonal music, human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria. And then a thing happened that I absolutely did not see coming. Just about the entire Democratic establishment immediately threw their support behind Kamala Harris. One after another, the endorsements came in. Mr. Biden endorsed Ms. Harris within minutes on Sunday afternoon. Before she had uttered a word about her intentions, he was swiftly followed by other party leaders, including Bill and Hillary Clinton, key Democratic senators and influential House members. By the evening, Mr. Shapiro had publicly backed Ms. Harris after a phone call from her. She also picked up endorsements from Governor Gavin Newsom of California, Mr. Cooper, and Mr. Kelly. Andy Beshear. AOC, too. All 50 state Democratic Party chairs. Numerous state delegates. Even a Nikki Haley PAC has endorsed Kamala. A coalition of former Republican presidential candidate Nikki Haley voters pledged their support for Democratic Vice President Kamala Harris's presidential bid on Sunday, hours after President Joe Biden announced that he was dropping out of the race. And in one day, Kamala Harris raised over $50 million. As I'm writing this, the total haul is now about $69 million. Nice. Joe Biden remains a master at doing politics. Dark Brandon the shit out of his passing of the torch. Clearly, This wasn't a spur-of-the-moment decision. Joe had to have worked behind the scenes to shore up this much immediate support for Kamala. He made sure not one word of any of this leaked. He timed the announcement of his decision so that Donnie and the Republicans spent the entire convention running against the wrong candidate. And the piece de resistance. Sending out a press release on Sunday afternoon, after the morning talk shows, totally screwed the media. No video clips, no breaking news, no chance for pundits to comment on how he sounded, looked, walked, etc. No chance to schedule guests to pick him apart as he spoke. He totally starved them of clicks and eyeballs, in repayment for them starving his candidacy of positive coverage purely for the sake of clicks and eyeballs. Look, I didn't want any of this to happen. Biden was my guy, and I was prepared to back Joe all the way to November and beyond. But, that said, I have to admit that last night I slept better than I have any time in the last month. Now let's turn our attention to all the people who need to fuck all the way off. Brian Stelter can fuck off. Stelter spent a month screaming that Joe must go, but now that he's gotten what he wanted, he's moved the goalposts to Joe must go, but not like this. Some people are just never happy. Maggie Haberman can follow Brian Stelter all the way to fuck offiston. Good old Mags, still the reliable stenographer to whom all the Republicans run when they have a trial balloon to float. In fact, Maggie Haberman can fuck off twice. Mags, no Democrat gives one shit what Bobby McBrainworms Jr. does with the rest of his annoying life. He doesn't matter. Ross Douthat can fuck off. Show us on the doll where Kamala hurt you, Ross. Hey, the entire New York Times can fuck off. Some is doing a fuck ton of heavy lifting here. Are these some black voters in the room with us right now? Note to Times Nepo publisher Arthur Greg Sulzberger, it doesn't matter how hard you suck up to Donnie, he's not going to make the Times his official state media if he takes power. Stop trying. Hey, Washington Post, you can fuck off, too. No, just no. In fact, all the nitwits still rooting for their own personal fantasy ticket can fuck off. How many times does Michelle Obama need to state that she has no interest in running for office? You're wasting everyone's time with this mental masturbation. Do it in private. Holy Mike Johnson can seriously fuck off. We all knew that the Republicans were immediately going to pivot to now Joe Biden must resign, but these clowns are not thinking this through. First of all, Joe quitting is a big bowl of never gonna happen. Second, does the GOP really want to spend the next 3 months running against President Kamala Harris? Now this is awesome, the Republican Party just realized that they're no longer running against icky old Joe Biden who smells bad and is too demented to realize that he died 6 months ago. They created this whole fiction about Joe Biden and now they can't use any of it and they're freaking the fuck out. Look at Nosferatu McGoebbels. He's practically in tears as he melts all the way down on Fox News. They held a primary, people, they had ballots, they filled out circles, they went to the voting booths, they spent money on advertisements, and as President Trump said, the Republican Party spent tens of millions of dollars running against Joe Biden. Now they just woke up one morning and said, never mind, we're canceling the entire primary, we're getting rid of our candidate and pretending the election just never even happened and let donors handpick a new nominee. It's not fair. How dare the Democrats come together around a young and vibrant candidate, leaving our guy to be the old fart in the race? Boo fucking who, you grievance babies. You demanded this happen, and now you're whining about it? Shut the fuck up and dry your eyes. Here's your binky. As Stephen Miller noted in his crybaby rant, Donnie Convict is hopping mad. He's demanding to speak to Sleepy Brandon's manager because he wants his money back. So, we are forced to spend time and money on fighting crooked Joe Biden, he polls badly after having a terrible debate, and quits the race. Now we have to start all over again. Shouldn't the Republican Party be reimbursed for fraud in that everybody around Joe, including his doctors and the fake news media, knew he was not capable of running for, or being, president? Just a skin? Sorry bro, no dice. You broke it, you bought it? In fact, Donnie spent hours last night on his crappy app, yelling at Joe Biden. I don't know what Donnie's issue is. He's never had a problem supporting a Kamala Harris run for office in the past. For the Republicans, their problems are just beginning. Our presumptive candidate is young, energetic, smart, and can speak in complete sentences. Their guy is a quadrus indicted twice impeached once convicted popular vote losing Adderall huffing insurrection leading ear diapering testimony ducking judge threatening lawyer ignoring witness tampering day one dictatoring disabled veteran dishonoring inheritance squandering rube fleecing clown makeup smearing language mangling serial sexual predating draft dodging casino bankrupting butler bullying daughter perving hush money paying real estate scamming bones perfaking ketchup hurling. Justice obstructing classified war plan thieving golf cheating weather map defacing horse paste promoting paper towel flinging race baiting tax evading evidence destroying charity defrauding money laundering diaper filling 88 count 78 year old fluorescent tangerine felony factory. It's the prosecutor versus the felon. I'll take that. Everyone is entitled to my own opinion is a reader supported publication. To receive new posts and support my work, consider becoming a free or paid subscriber. My thoughts on the Harris candidacy. I still believe in her and in the basic goodness of the American people. I believe that the people will choose goodness over evil, love over hate and progress over going back. When faced with the choice a demented, deranged senile old man filled with hatred and revenge, or a competent accomplished woman they will make the right choice. Congratulations, my Berkeley hometown girl. You got this girl. Go bold or go home. Berkeley girl makes it. The news. That Biden. Was stepping down. Throwing his support. For Kamala Harris. As president. Filled me with joy. And anticipation. Kamala Harris. Attended my elementary school. Thousand Oaks in Berkeley. A few years before me. And is a Berkeley girl. Through and through. Go Berkeley. Thousand Oak girl I say. T.O. Tuffy girl power. The first female VP. Of Asian descent. The first VP. Of black descent. The first Caribbean. To be on the ticket. And the first Hindu. As well. And the first. Berkeley native. On the ticket. It is time. For Berkeley to rule. In my humble opinion. Kamala. Here's what I would campaign on. The theme would be getting stuff done for the people. Reforming the federal budget. This is perhaps boring to voters but very important to the long-term stability of the country. I would call upon Congress to change how they do budgets and shift to a two-year budgetary cycle. The first year of Congress would be devoted to passing the two-year budget, the second year would be devoted to oversight and supplemental budget requests. Coupled that shifting to a calendar year budget. Eliminate the possibility of government shutdowns by enacting automatic CRs if budgets are not passed on time. But also require budgets to be passed on time December 1st in the prior year. If a budget is not passed on time, keep Congress in town until the budget is passed. And if for some reason the budget is not passed, ding congressional salaries until the budget is passed. Second, commission a study to look at our tax situation and make suggestions for common sense tax reform. Start by figuring out how much money the government spends in a given year, the reform of the tax code to generate most of the revenue from taxes. Consider a national sales tax as well. Reserve borrowing for large-scale infrastructure, and military spending. And consider a surcharge on income of about $25 million per year. I would also look at federal spending and ask that all departments identify lower priority projects with a required 5% reduction in federal spending per agency over a four-year period, except for health-related and education-related agencies which would be given a considerable bump up in spending. I would do this for 3 years so that in 3 years overall spending has been reduced by about 10%. Leave it up to the agencies to identify lower priority projects that should not be micromanaged by the White House. Therefore, the Defense Department consider eliminating such things as golf courses, domestic PX, and commissary stores and other non-essential spending. Finally, consider turning over some federal government functions to the states. The conservative idea of moving federal agencies out of Washington, D.C. has considerable merit in my opinion. The rest of my earlier suggestions follow with a few updates. I retired from the U.S. State Department in 2016 after 27 years of service. I grew up in Berkeley, went to college at the University of the Pacific and graduated from the University of Washington, Ma Korean Studies, MPA. I also served in the Peace Corps in Korea. I have been to 49 out of 50 states, minus Alaska, and 45 countries. My advice, in a nutshell, is to make this a campaign about the future and your vision of the future. Paint your opponent Donald Trump as yesterday's candidate, and mock him, calling on Grandpa Trump to retire to Florida and play golf. Depict him as senile, out of touch, corrupt and focused on returning America to the 19th century. And call for progressive bold new ideas for the future of America. Be optimistic, be full of hope and goodwill. Freely steal from Bernie and Elizabeth's proposals and adopt her detailed plans, after talking with her of course. Call for reform not revolution and stress competence versus incompetence and chaos. Hillary's biggest mistake was in my view making it all about how bad Donald Trump is, and not giving the voters a real sense of where she wanted to take the country. And making it seem that she thought she was entitled, and it was her time. That is a big turnoff in politics. She also took it for granted and did not compete everywhere. You have to out-hustle Trump and go everywhere, hold virtual town halls everywhere until the coronavirus threat fades away. You have to earn the trust of the voters and can't be seen as thinking you are entitled to the presidency because you have done your due, so to speak. That is the kiss of electoral suicide. Look at Mitt Romney and Hillary Clinton, both lost because they thought that it was their time and they were entitled to the presidency. The voters simply thought otherwise and showed them the door. And in an age where the voters were ready for a big change to the status quo, being the establishment candidate was the kiss of death. Not to mention she refused to compete everywhere. And allowed Donald Trump to paint her as crooked Hillary and as too much part of the establishment which the public rightly distrusted so much. She could have picked Bernie Sanders as her running mate, and perhaps defeated Donald Trump. In the end she won where it did not matter and did not compete where she should have competed. So, in this upcoming election you have to tell the voters why you are so much better for them and the country than Donald Trump. It will not be enough to run against Donald. People have to want to vote for you. Your experience counts for a lot, but it is not enough. How to beat Trump? Talk constantly about Donald Trump being the most corrupt president in U.S. history and that he is guilty or gross nepotism. Finally, ignore his tweets. When he tweets something obnoxious, dismiss it with the phrase "there he goes again." Then talk about your bold yet pragmatic agenda over and over again. Go bold or go home. The Times cries out for bold progressive challenges and for fresh thinking. Make people want to vote for you as they share your vision of the possible future. And want to have a positive, can-do message. Here are my suggested policy proposals. I would put forth a series of comprehensive, bold, future-oriented policies and reiterate them every chance you get. You could call them Joe's Plan for the Future of America, or Kamala's Contract with the American People, something along those lines. Let's boldly go into the future. And rename your campaign as Kamala for the American People. Use one of your great assets, your reputation for being an everyday person. But be big, bold, brassy, optimistic, and challenge your opponents to produce a better plan or shut up and work with you to solve the nation's problems. Call for free college education coupled with national service requirements. Call for all Americans to serve 3 years in public service either in the military or in the government or NGO sector, and in return, they will get 4 years of college paid for. For recent grads, they can serve and get their college debt forgiven. To those who say we can't afford this, say we can't afford to continue to put our college students in crippling debt they cannot afford. And everyone, especially the rich, should shoulder the burden of national service. Call for the Green New Deal. Point out time and time again China, Germany, and other countries are building the green energy resources of the future while the US, which invented green energy, is moving back to the 19th century. When critics say we can't afford this, tell them we can't afford to ruin the world for our children's future. We can't afford to continue burning fossil fuels. Climate change is real, and the US must lead the way forward. That is what great nations do, lead the world in embracing change, in embracing the promise of the future. We can do no less. Call to fix Obamacare. Point out time and time again that we still have a broken down, too expensive, too burdensome a healthcare system. Point out time and time again that we have the most expensive system in the world, yet we are about 25th in terms of healthcare outcomes. No one in this land should fear going bankrupt if they need to get medical care. We can do this right and we must do it right. I would acknowledge that Obamacare is not perfect and that if you had a chance to redo it you would make it much less bureaucratic and less burdensome. But be proud of what the Democrats accomplished. Promise to fix it and make it work. One potential fix would be to open the federal health care system to anyone who needs insurance and continue to provide subsidies to keep the premiums down. Another option would be an expansion of Medicare, so it covers about half the country. And enact permanent paid sick leave up to a month for all companies employing more than 10 people. When Republicans proclaim that they will repeal Obamacare and replace it with something, call them on their bullshit. Demand to know the plan now or tell them to shut up and work with you to fix Obamacare. Call for a slight reduction of military spending and national security spending to beef up healthcare spending and universal education access. Call to repair our alliances. Declare that our allies are our allies and our friends, and we will work with them to solve the world's problems and restore American leadership. We will rejoin the Paris Climate Change and work to make sure it works. We will rejoin the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And we will figure out how to work with China and even Russia to solve problems of mutual interest such as climate change. Vow to restore partnership with Mexico and Canada and Latin America as well as India and Southeast Asia. And restore ties with Europe as well. Rebuild the UN and international organizations. And join the International Criminal Court. Finally, close Gitmo as an affront to the American system of justice and human rights. Re-Israel vow to work with Palestinians and Israelis alike to restart the peace process. Offer a new deal to North Korea. We will continue to negotiate with the North Koreans, offering them a way towards reunification with South Korea and rejoining the World Economic Community. You can damn the former president here with faint praise. Say that it was good that he took the initiative to break the logjam and talk to the North, but due to his inexperience and his naivety he was unable to make a deal as the North Koreans played him. You can finish the job. Offer to talk with the Iranians. Tell the Iranians we are ready to talk with them and want a new deal that would benefit them and the US along the lines of what we are offering the North Koreans. Bring the troops home. I would call for some US troops to return to the US, where they will be reposted along our borders and serve as adjunct border patrol agents and first responders as part of their mandatory new national service. Rebuild America. I would gradually reduce military spending and devote resources to rebuilding America's crumbling infrastructure. This must include high-speed trains, and must include perhaps Hyperloop technology or maglev trains. And the next generation of airplanes as well. We must rebuild our mass transit systems. We must embrace the development of driverless vehicles. And as mentioned, we must beef up healthcare spending and assure universal access to higher education. These must be the new national priorities. I would throw the Republicans a bone offers to look at modest reductions in other government spending, for example decreasing spending on NPR but not eliminating it, and a slight decrease in foreign assistance, and UN contributions etc. And other government programs could be trimmed down a bit to pay for higher priorities. Challenge the Republicans on their "you are weakening national security" BS. When the Republicans scream you are weakening national security, call them out on their BS. Ask them how repositioning troops to help deal with national security issues at home weakens national security. How does going to universal military service weaken national security? How does getting out of endless wars weaken national security? How does closing a few bases in Europe weaken national security? Or closing a golf course? Or a commissary? Point out that we already spend more on national security than any other nation on earth. How does rebuilding America's failed infrastructure weaken national security? How does providing medical care or universal higher education, which benefits the entire nation, hamper national security? Challenge them to produce a better plan. Call for comprehensive immigration reform. Start by acknowledging we need to improve security at the border, but the wall is a waste of time and money that will not solve the problem. We need a comprehensive 21st century immigration policy that balances the need for continued immigration with the need to ensure that immigrants contribute to our country and enrich our country as they always have and always will. Again, throw the Republicans a bone offers to ensure that E-Verify is widely used by all employers and punish employers who hire illegals. I would also consider getting rid of the diversity visa program and the sibling immigration category, but grandfather people in that category, giving them 2 years to complete the immigration process with no new applicants being accepted. I would also push English language skills for immigrants as one of the new requirements. They must be able to handle the immigrant visa interview in English. That is something I agree with Trump on. Challenge the Republicans to come up a better plan and work with you to implement it. Call for a return to space, including lunar colonies and Martian colonies. It is time for the US to lead the world again in space exploration. Offer to lead the way in building lunar and Martian colonies with the participation of the world's other space powers. Call for the legalization of marijuana, emptying the prisons of marijuana offenders. End the endless war on drugs. Repeal marijuana prohibition. Empty the prisons of marijuana offenders. End the private prison for profit system. End the prison pipeline that sweeps up brown and black youths and sucks them into prison for life. Reserve prisons for the most dangerous offenders. All other prisoners should be sentenced to community service, drug treatment, or other non-prison sentences. Use the money saved by closing prisons for rebuilding infrastructure. Gun control. I like your gun control proposals. It is a step forward. Continue to push for universal background checks. Fully support LGBT rights. Fully support the religious freedom of all Americans, including non-believers. Call for a return to traditional American civil norms that Trump has so badly damaged. For VP, pick a centrist male governor. I like the governor of Kentucky or North Carolina. The governor of Michigan would be a good choice too. The governor of California, not so much. To sum up, be cautious, small-minded, narrowly focused, and all about how bad Donald is, you will lose. In short, go bold or go home. Sincerely, Jake Cosmos Aller. 703-436-1402. JackEckler@gmail.com. https://thworldaccordingtocosmos.com. TO alumnus. Call for public service. Wikipedia on history of national service in the U.S. Pros and cons on national service proposals. Time to embrace national service in exchange for free college tuition. H1 Why national service is worth it. Open letters to the candidates sent to Democratic candidates. Embrace public service, Mr. President. J. In any event, I believe that the time is now to call for national service in exchange for free college tuition / vocational training or grants to open small businesses. 3 years of service followed by 4 years of either college / technical training, or assistance in opening a small business. Call for free college education coupled with national service requirements. Dear Democratic candidates, I am writing to all of you and to President Trump to call for you to embrace national service in exchange for free college / technical training or assistance in opening a business. It is time to change the game plan in Washington, D.C. You need a new bold proposal that will unite the country and heal the divisions. My proposal is for you to embrace mandatory national service for 3 years. Everyone finishing their service would receive full funding for college, technical training, or a grant to set up their own business, because after all, not everyone needs to go to college. We need to encourage technical training and starting up small business as well. Advertisements. Report this AD. The key is that the service would be universal and all citizens and LPRs between the ages of 18 and 25 would serve 3 years, no exceptions. Most would be military, but people could serve as fine fathers. Adjust police officers, adjust border patrol officers, adjust teachers, Peace Corps volunteers, or serve in state/local and federal government positions. Call for all Americans to serve 3 years in public service, either in the military or in the government or NGO sector, and in return, they will get 4 years of college paid for. For recent graduates, they can serve and get their college debt forgiven. To those who say we can't afford this, say we can't afford to continue to put our college students in crippling debt they cannot afford. And everyone, especially the rich, should shoulder the burden of national service. And point out that shifting to a mandatory national service requirement would save the Pentagon money on salaries. The cost would be modest minimum wage, housing, medical care, and college tuition after their service. People would serve between age 18 and 25, 1 year of training and 2 years of service, with an optional second enlistment for 3 more years of educational benefits through PhD/professional degrees. Starting at age 18 until age 25, people will be randomly selected to begin service. Those who are 25 will have until they turn 26 to report for service. They would have 1 year to report for service. Free college/technical training or money to open a business in exchange for national service. Most people will start college or tech training institute, then do military or other service, and then return to college to finish their college. That is fine. Ensure that colleges will not only accommodate that but will also offer college credits for military and other on-the-job training acquired during national service. This would also cut the cost of college attendance for most people to a manageable 3 years instead of 4 to 5 years. And of course, ensure that people can go to technical training institutes instead of a traditional college, as we really need to grow the next generation of technical workers as well. And also ensure that those who wish financial assistance in setting up a small business would receive that assistance, as well as we need to encourage the small business startups as well. After service can compete to become an NCO/officer or work for the federal/state/local/tribal government/UN or NGO. After finishing basis service, those who wish to make a career of it could compete to become an NCO or an officer, and resume service after finishing college. And/or compete to enter government service for the federal government or state and local government as well. And the service academies will only accept those who have finished basic service. This would apply to new service academies being set up, see below for more details. All must serve. And most importantly, shared national service will help restore America's sense that this is our land, this land belongs to everyone. The rich and the poor alike. We are all in this together. We have lost sight of that. The military has become an army of paid mercenaries recruited from the lower classes. If everyone serves, there will be less temptation to send troops into harm's way. This will be a win-win for everyone except for the student loan vultures. I would bring most of the troops home and station them along the southern border, where they could be used to help bolster border security and assist as first responders to natural disaster. Sell this as a real border security that will get the job done. Establish new service academies for the diplomatic, intelligence services/Space Force/NASA, and law enforcement. I would also call for 4 new national service academies to be set up. One would be for diplomatic and intelligence service, the other would be for law enforcement, the third would be for the Space Force/NASA, the last would be more technical scientific agencies of the federal government focusing on science and technology issues. These academies, like the military academies including a Coast Guard Academy, and beefing up the Maritime Service Academy, would take only those who finished their military basis service. This would be a great way to restore our diplomatic corps and intelligence services as well as our law enforcement person. All graduates can meet their service obligation, 5 years post-graduation, through working for federal/state/local/tribal governments, the UN, or NGOs. All the service academies as well as the medical schools, the Foreign Service Training Center, which will be transformed into the new diplomatic/intelligence training academy, would work together on the National Service Academies Consortium to coordinate policies and training, including postgraduate training programs at the various military and other federal government training programs. National service will bring U.S. together as one nation. I believe that this proposal could be enacted with widespread bipartisan support. It would go a long way to help heal the divisions of our country and bring us all together as a nation. I hope you will fully embrace this proposal and I look forward to discussing it with your staff. Welcome to the God Pod, a newsletter dedicated to satire and comedy. We rely entirely on the generosity of our readers to be able to continue our efforts. If you appreciate what you read here today, consider becoming a paid supporter. Trump must drop out because he's old as fuck. July 22nd. Read in app. Dear humans. God here. Now that President Biden has heroically passed the torch to Kamala Harris, can we talk about the orange elephant in the room? Trump must drop out because he's old as fuck. Share. Yeah, I said it. At 78 years old, Donald is practically fossilized. You wouldn't trust your grandpa to fix your Wi-Fi, so why let him run the country? He's older than dirt and twice as clueless. Like holy shit, did you see his speech at the RNC last week? The giant creep rambled on for 2 hours like he was Grandpa Simpson. Look, the presidency is a tough gig. It needs someone with energy, someone who can stay awake past 7 p.m. without nodding off. Trump. He falls asleep in court. He fell asleep during his own convention. He's got one foot in the grave and the other on a banana peel. The only marathon he's running is a nap marathon. Support our satire. And let's talk about the gaffes. Donald says some stupid insane shit that doesn't make sense every single time he speaks. The only people it makes sense to are also totally delusional Christian nationalist freaks like Marjorie Taylor Greene. And don't get me started on the health issues. Remember that mysterious trip to Walter Reed? Make America great again? This man can't handle a ramp. The only thing he can make great again is the act of face-planting into the ground. So, here's the divine decree, Trump, pack it up. Go home, put on your slippers, and watch Matlock reruns. Leave running the country to someone who can remember what day it is without checking Fox News. It's time for you to drop out, you crusty old bag of assholes. Now that I, the Lord thy God, have brought attention to this issue, I am sure the media will be obsessing about it every day from here on out. The Lord has spoken. Forwarded this email? Subscribe here for more. 7 Lessons from Joe Biden's Candidacy. The Democratic Party is healthy. The Republican Party is not. Jonathan V. Last. July 22nd. 1-7 Lessons. Before we start, I did a YouTube thing about Biden last night, if you're interested. Now let's go. 1. The Democratic Party is a healthy institution. On the night of June 27, the various power centers within the Democratic Party began a difficult conversation: was Joe Biden still capable of running a vigorous campaign? Over 3 weeks the party reached a diffuse if not unanimous consensus: he was not. This consensus was the product of all levels of the party, elder statesmen such as Nancy Pelosi, elected Democrats analyzing their own future prospects, donors making decisions about spending, and the main body of public opinion among Democratic voters. Once this consensus was reached, the various power centers began a dialogue with the party's leader, President Biden. The party expressed its choice. Biden pushed back. The party took up the question again and, after due consideration, held firm. Joe Biden then stepped aside for the good of the nation. This is how healthy institutions are supposed to work. At the Bulwark, there has been a lot of drama over the last 3 weeks. We told you what we really thought, even though it meant making some people mad. Our mission is to have honest and real conversations. Because that's what healthy institutions do. Right here, in the Bulwark community, those conversations were great. I mean, they were often painful. But they were always civil and conducted in good faith. How special is this community? We had one member who was so disappointed in us that he cancelled his subscription and then came back to the comments every day to try to convince others to cancel their subscriptions, too. And he did it passionately, but with respect. Where do you find people like that on the internet? It was amazing. The coming weeks are going to be full of history. Come and ride through it with us. Join now. 2. The process which elevated Kamala Harris was sensible. The Democratic Party made another institutional decision in parallel with the Biden question, it vetted Kamala Harris. This subroutine executed in the background, but it was active. Democratic voters began to consider her as the nominee and polling showed that they were comfortable with her. Party elders evaluated her fitness. Donors and elected Democrats took her measure. The fact that no anti-Harris groundswell or even boomlet emerged is proof that the party decided that Harris was an acceptable nominee. After Biden blessed Harris on Sunday afternoon, the party coalesced around her in much the way it did Biden after the New Hampshire primary in 2020. The Democratic Party will enter the election more unified than it had been pre-debate. Share. 3. Kamala Harris can run as an insurgent, but with the advantages of an incumbent. The largest advantage of incumbency is that a candidate does not have to take base-pleasing positions during a primary campaign that can hurt him during a general election. Because of the extraordinary nature of her ascendance, Harris possesses this advantage. She will carry nearly every advantage of incumbency and yet she can credibly position herself as this election's change agent. 4. Trump is holding the age bomb. The Trump campaign spent 2 years creating a political bomb concerning old age. They assumed that they could plant this bomb at the feet of Joe Biden. Trump is now the one holding the age bomb. He is not only a full generation older than Harris, everything about him looks geriatric by comparison. From his gait to his bronzed over pallor, from the way he rambles and gets lost in sentences to his inability to keep facts straight. Every split screen now makes Trump look old and decrepit by comparison. Leave a comment. 5. There was enormous pent-up demand among Democrats for a younger leader. In the first 24 hours, Kamala Harris raised over $100 million from small-dollar donors. Sit with that for a moment. $100 million. That's more money than any Democrat has ever raised in a single day. It's twice as much as Trump raised following his felony conviction. If this doesn't snap your head back, it should. Because it's as good a proxy as you'll find for excitement. It will be several days until we have polling with a more detailed view of Harris's support from Democratic voters, but it is already clear that she will perform much better than Biden has within her party. Here's my advice. You should be open to the idea that Harris could ride a wave of excitement and passion that absolutely no one was seeing until Biden stepped aside. I'm talking Obama 08 levels of energy. It's not a given. But it's in the realm of the possible. Keep your eyes peeled for it. Share. 6. The Republican Party is a failed state. At the debate, Donald Trump also demonstrated, again, that he is unfit for office. He rambled and lied incoherently. He is a convicted felon. A jury found him guilty of sexual assault. He has said he wants to be a dictator and that he wants to terminate parts of the Constitution. He selected as his running mate a man who advised disobeying orders from the Supreme Court and forcing a constitutional crisis. Until last week, there was nothing stopping the Republican Party from forcing Trump off the ticket. The party elders and elected officials could have demanded that Trump step aside. Republican voters could have said that they had no confidence in his ability to govern. Donors could have closed their wallets. But the plain fact is that not one single Republican called on Trump to step aside. Not one. Why? Because the various precincts of the Republican Party understand that they hold no power at all over Trump. They could not ask him to withdraw from the race. Even broaching the subject would be grounds for excommunication from the party. The Democratic Party is a functioning institution, with checks and balances, constituencies and power structures. Like any institution, it is amorphous and its decision-making is mostly organic. The Republican Party is an autocracy where the only thing that matters is the will of the leader. All power flows through him. All decisions are made by him. There are no competing power centers, only vassal states overseen by his noblemen. Share. 7. Harris is an underdog. One of the reasons the last 3 weeks have been so difficult is because Democrats were not choosing between a good outcome and a bad outcome. Those sorts of choices are easy. Instead, Democrats were tasked with deciding between least bad options. Humans rebel against the idea of least bad. When faced with choices, we want to believe that at least one of them is good. When the first real Harris vs. Trump polling comes out next week, we'll see how big of a hole she's in. But unlike Biden, Harris has the ability to spend the next 3 months on offense, all day, every day. If she can deliver the goods, she has a puncher's chance. Leave a comment. 2. In praise of Biden. A slight pushback against those who believe Biden took too long to step aside. It was 3.5 weeks from the debate to Biden pulling out. That's it? Joe Biden is the president, but he's also just a man. Coming to a decision like this one, an unprecedented decision, is hard. There's a lot to weigh and there's a tremendous responsibility to get it right. My own view is that Biden made the call basically as quickly as possible. He couldn't have done it the week of the NATO summit. Then Trump was shot in the ear. Then there was the Republican convention. To my mind, Biden's timing on this was optimal, actually. Nothing about Joe Biden's presidency was inevitable. Not his candidacy. Not his victory over Trump. Not his withdrawal from re-election. At nearly every turn, Biden did the right thing for America. His legacy is assured. He will be remembered as one of the great modern presidents. Leave a comment. I said this last night and I'll say it again. History had its eye on Joe Biden, and he met the moment. He did his part. Now it's up to Kamala Harris and us to do ours. This is the moment. Live it with us. Join now. 3 revealed preferences. In the coming weeks we will find out if the people who said, "I hate Trump, but Biden is too old," really meant it. Will they find some new excuse for why they have to vote for Trump? Will they become unconcerned about the risks of old age and cognitive decline in a president? I'm not talking about partisan public personalities on Twitter. I'm talking about swing voters, the kind of Trump to Biden voters who have been backsliding in Trump's direction. Sarah's focus groups are going to be absolutely vital for understanding how this group thinks. Don't miss them. LCIC. Chill the fuck out, we've got this. There's no need for panic. Jeff Tide Rich. July 22nd. So, that happened. Upgrade to paid. For about an hour after Biden's announcement, I ran around with my hair on fire. I'd just spent a month warning everyone about the chaos that Biden dropping out would bring: infighting, battles over fundraising, lawsuits, atonal music, human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria. And then a thing happened that I absolutely did not see coming. Just about the entire Democratic establishment immediately threw their support behind Kamala Harris. One after another, the endorsements came in. Mr. Biden endorsed Ms. Harris within minutes on Sunday afternoon. Before she had uttered a word about her intentions, he was swiftly followed by other party leaders, including Bill and Hillary Clinton, key Democratic senators and influential House members. By the evening, Mr. Shapiro had publicly backed Ms. Harris after a phone call from her. She also picked up endorsements from Governor Gavin Newsom of California, Mr. Cooper, and Mr. Kelly. Andy Beshear. AOC. 2. All 50 state Democratic Party chairs. Numerous state delegates. Even a Nikki Haley PAC has endorsed Kamala. A coalition of former Republican presidential candidate Nikki Haley voters pledged their support for Democratic Vice President Kamala Harris's presidential bid on Sunday, hours after President Joe Biden announced that he was dropping out of the race. And in one day, Kamala Harris raised over $50 million. As I'm writing this, the total haul is now about $69 million. Nice. Joe Biden remains a master at doing politics. Dark Brandon the shit out of his passing of the torch. Clearly, this wasn't a spur-of-the-moment decision. Joe had to have worked behind the scenes to shore up this much immediate support for Kamala. He made sure not one word of any of this leaked. He timed the announcement of his decision so that Donnie and the Republicans spent the entire convention running against the wrong candidate. And the piece de resistance. Sending out a press release on Sunday afternoon, after the morning talk shows, totally screwed the media. No video clips, no breaking news, no chance for pundits to comment on how he sounded, looked, walked, etc. No chance to schedule guests to pick him apart as he spoke. He totally starved them of clicks and eyeballs, in repayment for them starving his candidacy of positive coverage purely for the sake of clicks and eyeballs. Look, I didn't want any of this to happen. Biden was my guy, and I was prepared to back Joe all the way to November and beyond. But, that said, I have to admit that last night I slept better than I have any time in the last month. Now let's turn our attention to all the people who need to fuck all the way off. Brian Stelter can fuck off. Stelter spent a month screaming that Joe must go, but now that he's gotten what he wanted, he's moved the goalposts to Joe must go, but not like this. Some people are just never happy. Maggie Haberman can follow Brian Stelter all the way to fuck offiston. Good old Mags, still the reliable stenographer to whom all the Republicans run when they have a trial balloon to float. In fact, Maggie Haberman can fuck off twice. Mags, no Democrat gives one shit what Bobby McBrainworms Jr. does with the rest of his annoying life. He doesn't matter. Ross Douthat can fuck off. Show us on the doll where Kamala hurt you, Ross. Hey, the entire New York Times can fuck off. Some is doing a fuck ton of heavy lifting here. Are these some black voters in the room with us right now? Note to Times Nepo publisher Arthur Greg Sulzberger, it doesn't matter how hard you suck up to Donnie, he's not going to make the Times his official state media if he takes power. Stop trying. Hey, Washington Post, you can fuck off, too. No, just no. In fact, all the nitwits still rooting for their own personal fantasy ticket can fuck off. How many times does Michelle Obama need to state that she has no interest in running for office? You're wasting everyone's time with this mental masturbation. Do it in private. Holy Mike Johnson can seriously fuck off. We all knew that the Republicans were immediately going to pivot to now Joe Biden must resign, but these clowns are not thinking this through. First of all, Joe quitting is a big bowl of never gonna happen. Second, does the GOP really want to spend the next 3 months running against President Kamala Harris? Now this is awesome, the Republican Party just realized that they're no longer running against icky old Joe Biden who smells bad and is too demented to realize that he died 6 months ago. They created this whole fiction about Joe Biden and now they can't use any of it and they're freaking the fuck out. Look at Nosferatu McGoebbels. He's practically in tears as he melts all the way down on Fox News. They held a primary, people, they had ballots, they filled out circles, they went to the voting booths, they spent money on advertisements, and as President Trump said, the Republican Party spent tens of millions of dollars running against Joe Biden. Now they just woke up one morning and said, never mind, we're canceling the entire primary, we're getting rid of our candidate and pretending the election just never even happened and let donors handpick a new nominee. It's not fair. How dare the Democrats come together around a young and vibrant candidate, leaving our guy to be the old fart in the race? Boo fucking who, you grievance babies. You demanded this happen, and now you're whining about it? Shut the fuck up and dry your eyes. Here's your binky. As Stephen Miller noted in his crybaby rant, Donnie Convict is hopping mad. He's demanding to speak to Sleepy Brandon's manager because he wants his money back. So, we are forced to spend time and money on fighting crooked Joe Biden, he polls badly after having a terrible debate, and quits the race. Now we have to start all over again. Shouldn't the Republican Party be reimbursed for fraud in that everybody around Joe, including his doctors and the fake news media, knew he was not capable of running for, or being, president? Just a skin? Sorry bro, no dice. You broke it, you bought it. In fact, Donnie spent hours last night on his crappy app, yelling at Joe Biden. I don't know what Donnie's issue is. He's never had a problem supporting a Kamala Harris run for office in the past. For the Republicans, their problems are just beginning. Our presumptive candidate is young, energetic, smart, and can speak in complete sentences. Their guy is a quadrus indicted twice impeached once convicted popular vote losing Adderall huffing insurrection leading ear diapering testimony ducking judge threatening lawyer ignoring witness tampering day one dictatoring disabled veteran dishonoring inheritance squandering rube fleecing clown makeup smearing language mangling serial sexual predating draft dodging casino bankrupting butler bullying daughter perving hush money paying real estate scamming bones perfaking ketchup hurling. Justice obstructing classified war plan thieving golf cheating weather map defacing horse paste promoting paper towel flinging race baiting tax evading evidence destroying charity defrauding money laundering diaper filling 88 count 78 year old fluorescent tangerine felony factory. It's the prosecutor versus the felon. I'll take that. Everyone is entitled to my own opinion is a reader supported publication. To receive new posts and support my work, consider becoming a free or paid subscriber. Chill the fuck out, we've got this. There's no need for panic. Jeff Tide Rich. July 22nd. So, that happened. Upgrade to paid. For about an hour after Biden's announcement, I ran around with my hair on fire. I'd just spent a month warning everyone about the chaos that Biden dropping out would bring infighting, battles over fundraising, lawsuits, atonal music, human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together mass hysteria. And then a thing happened that I absolutely did not see coming, just about the entire Democratic establishment immediately threw their support behind Kamala Harris. One after another, the endorsements came in. Mr. Biden endorsed Ms. Harris within minutes on Sunday afternoon. Before she had uttered a word about her intentions, he was swiftly followed by other party leaders, including Bill and Hillary Clinton, key Democratic senators and influential House members. By the evening, Mr. Shapiro had publicly backed Ms. Harris after a phone call from her. She also picked up endorsements from Governor Gavin Newsom of California, Mr. Cooper, and Mr. Kelly. Andy Beshear. AOC, too. All 50 state Democratic Party chairs. Numerous state delegates. Even a Nikki Haley PAC has endorsed Kamala. A coalition of former Republican presidential candidate Nikki Haley voters pledged their support for Democratic Vice President Kamala Harris's presidential bid on Sunday, hours after President Joe Biden announced that he was dropping out of the race. And in one day, Kamala Harris raised over $50 million. As I'm writing this, the total haul is now about $69 million. Nice. Joe Biden remains a master at doing politics. Dark Brandon the shit out of his passing of the torch. Clearly, this wasn't a spur-of-the-moment decision. Joe had to have worked behind the scenes to shore up this much immediate support for Kamala. He made sure not one word of any of this leaked. He timed the announcement of his decision so that Donnie and the Republicans spent the entire convention running against the wrong candidate. And the piece de resistance. Sending out a press release on Sunday afternoon, after the morning talk shows, totally screwed the media. No video clips, no breaking news, No chance for pundits to comment on how he sounded, looked, walked, etc. No chance to schedule guests to pick him apart as he spoke. He totally starved them of clicks and eyeballs, in repayment for them starving his candidacy of positive coverage purely for the sake of clicks and eyeballs. Look, I didn't want any of this to happen. Biden was my guy, and I was prepared to back Joe all the way to November and beyond. But, that said, I have to admit that last night I slept better than I have any time in the last month. Now let's turn our attention to all the people who need to fuck all the way off. Brian Stelter can fuck off. Stelter spent a month screaming that Joe must go, but now that he's gotten what he wanted, he's moved the goalposts to Joe must go, but not like this. Some people are just never happy. Maggie Haberman can follow Brian Stelter all the way to fuck offiston. Good old Mags, still the reliable stenographer to whom all the Republicans run when they have a trial balloon to float. In fact, Maggie Haberman can fuck off twice. Mags, no Democrat gives one shit what Bobby McBrainworms Jr. does with the rest of his annoying life. He doesn't matter. Ross Douthat can fuck off. Show us on the doll where Kamala hurt you, Ross. Hey, the entire New York Times can fuck off. Some is doing a fuck ton of heavy lifting here. Are these some black voters in the room with us right now? Note to Times Nepo publisher Arthur Greg Sulzberger, it doesn't matter how hard you suck up to Donnie, he's not going to make the Times his official state media if he takes power. Stop trying. Hey, Washington Post, you can fuck off, too. No, just no. In fact, all the nitwits still rooting for their own personal fantasy ticket can fuck off. How many times does Michelle Obama need to state that she has no interest in running for office? You're wasting everyone's time with this mental masturbation. Do it in private. Holy Mike Johnson can seriously fuck off. We all knew that the Republicans were immediately going to pivot to now Joe Biden must resign, but these clowns are not thinking this through. First of all, Joe quitting is a big bowl of never gonna happen. Second, does the GOP really want to spend the next 3 months running against President Kamala Harris? Now this is awesome, the Republican Party just realized that they're no longer running against icky old Joe Biden who smells bad and is too demented to realize that he died 6 months ago. They created this whole fiction about Joe Biden and now they can't use any of it and they're freaking the fuck out. Look at Nosferatu Goebbels. He's practically in tears as he melts all the way down on Fox News. They held a primary, people, they had ballots, they filled out circles, they went to the voting booths, they spent money on advertisements, and as President Trump said, the Republican Party spent tens of millions of dollars running against Joe Biden, now they just woke up one morning and said, never mind, we're canceling the entire primary. We're getting rid of our candidate and pretending the election just never even happened and let donors handpick a new nominee. It's not fair. How dare the Democrats come together around a young and vibrant candidate, leaving our guy to be the old fart in the race? Who fucking who, you grievance babies? You demanded this happen, and now you're whining about it? Shut the fuck up and dry your eyes. Here's your binky. As Stephen Miller noted in his crybaby rant, Donnie Convict is hopping mad. He's demanding to speak to Sleepy Brandon's manager because he wants his money back. So, we are forced to spend time and money on fighting crooked Joe Biden, he polls badly after having a terrible debate, and quits the race. Now we have to start all over again. Shouldn't the Republican Party be reimbursed for fraud in that everybody around Joe, including his doctors and the fake news media, knew he was not capable of running for, or being, president? Just a skin? Sorry bro, no dice. You broke it, you bought it. In fact, Donnie spent hours last night on his crappy app, yelling at Joe Biden. I don't know what Donnie's issue is. He's never had a problem supporting a Kamala Harris run for office in the past. For the Republicans, their problems are just beginning. Our presumptive candidate is young, energetic, smart, and can speak in complete sentences. Their guy is a quadrus indicted twice impeached once convicted popular vote losing Adderall huffing insurrection leading ear diapering testimony ducking judge threatening lawyer ignoring witness tampering day one dictatoring disabled veteran dishonoring inheritance squandering rube fleecing clown makeup smearing language mangling serial sexual predating draft dodging casino bankrupting butler bullying daughter perving hush money paying real estate scamming bones perfaking ketchup hurling. Justice obstructing classified war plan thieving golf cheating weather map defacing horse paste promoting paper towel flinging race baiting tax evading evidence destroying charity defrauding money laundering diaper filling 88 count 78 year old fluorescent tangerine felony factory. It's the prosecutor versus the felon. I'll take that. Everyone is entitled to my own opinion is a reader supported publication. To receive new posts and support my work, consider becoming a free or paid subscriber.